This is Julie at Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 11 of Dogcast Radio. In this episode, we have a breed profile. But is it for a giraffe?
You need to watch, you know, when you're cleaning it, you've got the slobber on the ceilings as well as the top of the walls.
Well, we have training advice.
And going back to your spider analogy, what we wouldn't do is we wouldn't tie somebody up in the chair and upend a bucket full of spiders at their feet.
Well, I should hope not. Don't worry, all will become clear. And Buddy tells us about the perils of cheese.
From that sharp, savoury aroma, to the melt-in-the-mouth moment of eating it, to the lingering aftertaste, I love it.
Things your dog would definitely want to say to you. Enough with this heel word. Can't you hurry up to my speed rather than slow me down to yours?
Hello, and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate. In today's programme, we have the Dog Show with a Difference,
Dog Tags Going Digital,
and details about the UK Guide Dogs for the Blind 75th Anniversary Celebrations.
But first, it's Bon Appetit at the Pooch's Patisserie in Paris.
The canine population of Paris is getting a chance to dine just as finely as their owners, and it's all thanks to an American. Harriet Sternstein has opened Bon Monchan, offering goodies, grooming, toys and accessories for dogs. All of the food on offer is freshly prepared each day using the best natural ingredients, and even includes doggy birthday cakes made to order. Flavours vary according to the season to keep customers begging for more, and the high standard of ingredients and hygiene means that shopping here is a shared experience, as not just dogs, but owners are able to try before they buy.
So, we can forget about the cat that got the cream. Harriet's Golden Labrador, Sophie Marie, is the lucky dog who lives at the Pooch Patisserie. Last time, we revealed that America's firmly established favourite breed is the Labrador Retriever. However, recently, Americans voted for their favourite crossbreed dog. In Dog Show USA, sponsored by NBC and Purina, Tilly, a Cocker Spaniel Dachshund mix from California, beat 15,000 other dogs to be voted best in show. This was a dog show with a difference, in more ways than one, however, and although there were categories for best sporting, toy, herding, working and terrier dog, there were also categories for best trick, owner lookalike and cutest face. Unlike most champions, Tilly started life in a dog shelter and was then adopted by owner Julie George, who spotted her at a neighbour's house where the pup was being fostered. The unique aspect of this show was internet access, with over 45,000 people voting online during the contest.
On the subject of technology, we do like our dog-related gadgets, especially if they help keep our dog safe, and the Dog E-Tag does just that. This smart little device is 1 3/8 inches across and only 3/4 of an ounce in weight. It comes in several different colours and can cope with many languages. And on top of all of that, is shockproof, waterproof and virtually temperature-proof. It takes 40 lines of information, which could include phone numbers and important medical information, and even lights up for ease of reading. If any information needs updating, for example change of address, even a temporary vacation one, this is easily done, and a secret PIN number prevents anyone else tampering with the device. The Dog E-Tag attaches firmly to the dog's collar and can replace the several tags sometimes needed for all the necessary information. So, if you'd like a dog tag that's truly 21st century, this one's well worth checking out.
During 2006, Guide Dogs for the Blind will be celebrating 75 years of helping and giving independence back to people who are blind or partially sighted. In January, a new display called Moving Forward Together was opened, appropriately enough, in the Isle of Dogs in London. This display will be touring the UK throughout 2006 and features exhibitions with touch and audio aspects, and some which simulate sight problems to foster understandings of the difficulties faced by those who are visually challenged. The future of Guide Dogs for the Blind will hopefully be secured with the building of a puppy breeding centre and the state-of-the-art kennels, meaning that they will be around for many more years to support those whose lives might be enhanced by a guide dog.
The guide dog website has details of events they will be attending during the year, including Crufts in March, and links to this site can be found on the Dogcast Radio website, along with links to Bon Mon Chien and the Doggy Tag.
And finally, it's that time of year again. It's a depressing fact, but rescue centres around the world are once again bracing themselves for the influx of dogs, unfortunate enough to have been bought as Christmas presents, whose novelty has now worn off. In the next episode of Dogcast Radio, which will feature items concerning dog rescue, we'll be bringing you the sad facts and figures of the situation, and you can also find out some of the ways you can help. Until then, it's goodbye from us at Dogcast Radio News.
Things your dog would definitely want to say to you. What's the deal with cats then? They don't guard anything, they do their own thing, and are only interested in you when you feed them. And they get their freedom, and I'm on a lead. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. What do you do if your dog doesn't like a particular thing? It could be certain people, other dogs, cats, whatever. We talked to dog owner Jo about her dog Pippa, who doesn't like men. Then we got some advice for her from Mim Edwards, the marvellous dog trainer from Adelaide. She gives great insights into why to do things, not just what to do. And she also gives consideration of how this will affect the dog.
Her name's Pippa,
mm-hmm.
And she's a miniature Schnauzer.
Okay, smashing. And how old was she when she came to live with you?
She was 9 weeks old.
9 weeks, right. Had you seen her mother and father with her, or...?
I'd seen the mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd also seen her uncle, if you like.
Mm.
A friend of mine has her uncle as a pet. She's why we got her, really.
Oh, so you'd met a relative of hers?
Yeah.
And liked it? And, right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's always good when you know a dog that's...
Yes, that's right. He's a lovely dog.
So she came to live with you at 9 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And perhaps if you could just say, what's your household like?
Myself and my two children, my two girls.
So she's used to mixing with you and two other... So it's females?
Yes.
She's used to?
Yes.
Right.
She doesn't really see many males, to be honest.
Mm.
She sees probably two that she sees a lot of.
Mm. And she's okay with them?
Yes, she's fine with them.
Mm. So she doesn't do the barking or the...
She barks when they first come, but no, she's okay with them.
Yeah, and is she friendly with them or...?
Yes.
Okay, so what's she like with other men, you know, if you're out and about or if a strange man comes to us, what's she like then?
She will bark.
Yeah.
Yeah, she barks quite rapidly, you know.
Yeah.
But, And we'll sort of try and go to them. But if they came towards her, she would run a mile.
Right. So she's not aggressive?
No, she's not aggressive.
Yeah, so there's no aggression there, but it's just... Like, it's more of a warning then, isn't it? She's barking,
yeah.
Barking.
Yeah, she just barks. Because I think as well, if she, you know, she doesn't recognise them and it's a man, she just barks like mad.
Yeah.
But she's not aggressive, no.
No. So if you're out on a walk and a man passes, how does she react?
She'd go towards them barking.
Yeah.
And then as we pass, she'd stop.
So to the man,
yeah,
that she's going towards, that he could interpret that as her being aggressive towards,
yeah,
him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she's not. She's just sort of, she's doing a warning, isn't she?
I suppose she's being protective.
Yes. Yeah.
As opposed to aggressive.
Yeah. Have you taken her to any puppy classes or training classes?
Yeah. We went to some puppy training classes, just very basic ones.
Mm.
But I have to say we didn't finish the course because the last one was a weekend when I was away, so I didn't actually get to do the last one.
Yeah.
But it was just a very basic course of trying to teach her to come back to me.
Mm.
And, you know, sort of heal and that sort of thing, which wasn't very successful, really.
Yeah. So, but that was training, not just socialising?
Well, they called it puppy training.
Right.
So, I mean, she socialised right from the word go, really, with other people's dogs.
Yeah.
So, no, it was more training, really.
Yeah. And she, how is she with other dogs?
Fine. Most of them.
Yeah.
She socialises with other dogs and she's not a problem at all.
We're going to have some advice now from Mim Edwards. We've heard about the problem from Jo with her dog Pippa, who's afraid of men,
or who reacts badly to men, who does this barking and this aggressive or protective behaviour towards men. Let's find out, what should Jo be doing with her to combat this problem?
Okay. Hi, Julie. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine.
Good. Look, not seeing the dog, it's very difficult to say what the dog is thinking, and often we can only speculate about what dogs are actually thinking when they perform certain behaviours. But having said that, I mean, for example, we don't know whether it's a defensive behaviour or an offensive behaviour. We don't know if it stems from fear. Most types of behaviour would stem from some sort of anxiety. So we can only speculate as to why the dog is behaving like this. But one thing is certain, if we want to change the behaviour, we need to actively work on it. So for example, it's not a matter of stopping XYZ behaviour. We need to work on what we want the dog to do instead. And so I thought what I'd do is perhaps talk about it as if this was my dog.
Mm-hmm.
And say, for example, we have a dog that's, in fact, I do have a dog that's not particularly keen on men with beards or men with sunglasses. So I can appreciate where Jo is coming from with Pippa. What you need to do is there's a many-pronged attack, if you like. So the first thing might be you might need to desensitize the dog to the presence of men. For example, I understand Pippa comes from an all-female household with very limited contact from men.
Yes.
So what you might do is you might encourage her to take some treats from men. Chances are she probably wouldn't even get that close because she would be barking her head off. So what we might do is perhaps teach her an alternate behaviour. For example, if we're walking along the street and a gentleman is coming towards us, what I might do is to prevent the behaviour from occurring. Remember, the goal is always to prevent the inappropriate behaviour from occurring. We might cross the road and perhaps start giving the dog some tasty little treats. What we're doing here is we're pairing something pleasant, which is the food, with something unpleasant, which is the man coming towards us. This is basically called classical conditioning, where we pair something pleasant with something unpleasant, and it actually changes the way the dog feels about the unpleasant object, whether it's a man or children or another dog or a truck or you know, big green bins or whatever it might be. So the first thing we do is we prevent the behaviour from occurring. So we try and cross the road, provide some distance between the dog and the gentleman. Then we'll give the dog some tasty treats to pair something pleasant with something unpleasant, which is the gentleman. So we're teaching the dog to do something else. In other words, look at me, take the food. Or some dogs might do better if they're asked to sit and just watch. Some dogs may do better if they're asked to carry on walking along the street. And the goal is to slowly reduce the distance between the dog and the object of its barking, which in this case is men, but it could be any number of other things. We need to work the dog sub-threshold. That means we need to start giving the dog something to do before the dog has a chance to start barking or start to behave inappropriately. So that would be one prong of attack. A second thing might be if the dog does tolerate some men in the home, for example, I'm presuming that there might be grandparents or brothers or whatever coming to visit or uncles, it may well be that the dog might respond better to men if the men take over the feeding, perhaps the walking or grooming. So if mum backs off a little bit and allows somebody else to take over caring the dog, once again the dog may turn around in the way it feels about men, because its primary caregiver now is no longer mum but is now a gentleman, and that may desensitize the dog to the presence of men. Basically, as I said, it's we can only speculate as to why the dog is doing it, so we actually really need to start working on the behavior. Give the dog something else to do. Teach the dog a different behaviour. In other words, I don't want you barking at this gentleman as we go walking along the street. How about you look at me, come, sit, oh, look, here's a treat. So you always make it worth the dog's while by rewarding the behaviour that you do want. And you try not to put the dog in a situation where it's going to make the wrong decision. So one thing that you wouldn't do is if you know your dog is going to start barking because we've got a man coming towards us on the same side of the street, you wouldn't stick to your guns and say, right, well, you know, you're going to get over this come hell or high water. You know, we're going to lick this together. And you wouldn't force the dog to still keep walking on the same side of the street, because the minute the dog starts barking, all cognitive thought, I guess you could say, has left the dog. We need the dog to still be thinking about what it's doing. So you wouldn't force the issue. You work the dog at whatever comfort level the dog will give you. So it may well be that it may tolerate men at, say, 20 feet, but wouldn't tolerate them at 6 feet. And the goal is always to slowly lessen the distance between what the dog will give you and your goal.
You know, when people have a phobia, and you gradually, you know, if they're afraid of spiders, you show them a picture of a spider and they get used to the level they can tolerate, and then you up the level, and it sounds very similar to that.
That's very good. That's fantastic that you've picked that up, Julie. That's exactly right. And that's what we call desensitizing.
Yeah.
What we don't do is we don't do flooding. I mean, that's not an approved training method. And going back to your spider analogy, what we wouldn't do is we wouldn't tie somebody up in the chair and upend a bucket full of spiders at their feet.
No.
Because all rational thought definitely would go out the window then, and your fear would be such that you just couldn't think straight. So you do, as you say, you need to show a picture of a spider, and then you might bring the spider, the picture a bit closer. Then you might produce a spider in a jar or something at a doorway at a greater distance, or a spider on a television. So you're quite right. You bring the object or the trigger, you produce it at a much greater distance so that the subject can cope with their emotions, and then obviously the goal is to reduce the distance just by desensitizing.
Brilliant.
I would really recommend that she gets a behavioural trainer in to see the dog. One thing I can say for sure is if she does absolutely nothing, the chances are that the dog will never get better. This is a behaviour that does need to be worked on before the dog gets too much older, because once the dog passes a certain point, the behaviour becomes set in concrete then, and is very, very, very difficult to change. So I would recommend that she does something sooner rather than later, because this is something that isn't going to change on its own.
It's funny you say that. I was saying to Jenny yesterday, you know, my daughter, that we've got a friend with a German Shepherd who is just over 2. And this dog really is a handful. And so we've been helping her walk this dog, because, like, it's not going to pull me over. And it doesn't, you know, I mean, Buddy can do a good pull when he wants to, but, you know, this dog is lighter and it's not going to pull me over. And if it does, well, I'm in my 30s, it's not going to hurt me that much. Lovely dog, very friendly, but very undisciplined. And, for example, I mean, Buddy knows he sits and he doesn't go through a door or into the car or out of the car until he gets the, you know, okay. So we've really been working on this with this German Shepherd, and she's beginning to think, oh, right, I've got to do something to get through here. It's very, you know, pesky, but I've got to do. But I was saying to Jenny how hard it is to take a dog that's already grown up, you know, and then try and teach it these new things, whereas when you get a puppy, they're so much more malleable.
Absolutely. Julie, you're so correct there in your observation. As we get older, our habits really do become set in concrete, and it really takes a long, long time to change them. So, as you say, puppies are very malleable, and they're also more dependent on us. As dogs get older, they certainly get less dependent, and I'm sure you've realised this with Buddy as well. And that makes it more difficult. So, the dog is finding that this barking behaviour is working for her, because people approach, she barks, people recede. So the consequence of her barking is that the people actually go away, which is what she wants. Now, she doesn't know that the people are going to walk past her and carry on their own journey anyway.
Mm.
So she's probably, the chances are she's getting really good reinforcement from the barking, because what she wants to achieve has happened. The people have disappeared. So that's, she's actually getting reinforced for that inappropriate behaviour. Now, the late John Fisher really did wonderful pioneering work, and one of his things that he actually came up with, and it was more to do with dog-dog aggression rather than any reactivity shown to people, was that the dog would appear and the reactive dog would start barking. If the dog kept on barking, what would happen was that the approaching dog would stand absolutely still and would not leave until the dog stopped barking. So if you can picture that a handler and dog are approaching, a handler with a very reactive dog starts barking, the approaching handler and dog keep very still until the reactive dog stops barking, and then the approaching dog recedes. So that the reactive dog is actually learning that the only way that they get what they want, which is to send the other dog on their way, is if they be quiet. And it may well be that this could be something that this young schnauzer could learn as well, is that if the owner could set it up where as men approach, the dog starts barking, the men actually don't recede until the dog is quiet. We always have to be very careful what is reinforcing the dog, and often we're not reinforcing the dog ourselves with any treats or anything like that. But we have to be careful, because the dog is getting reinforcement from the environment or from other people or other dogs in the neighbourhood. In conclusion, what we're doing then is we need to keep the dog sub-threshold. In other words, try and start working the dog by giving it little treats or giving it something to do before it's had a chance to bark. So provide a distance between the dog and the trigger. And then the goal is to slowly reduce that distance, giving the dog something else to do. And then, of course, if the dog will accept people or men into the house, for a male to be the primary caregiver. So that also helps desensitize the dog to the presence of men.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. You've given us some really good ideas to work on then. That's brilliant.
No worries. Thanks, Julie.
Excellent advice once again from Mim Edwards. There's a link on our website to her website. Things your dog would definitely want to say to you. When it's raining, why do I have to go into the garden for a toilet break? Couldn't you put some paper down like in the old days? Buddy's Diary.
Hello, Buddy the Black Labrador here. I have a severe warning for any dogs listening, and it's about training. Now, humans aren't very intelligent. They can only use two legs to walk or run on. They seem to have absolutely no sense of smell. And I have never in my life seen one do any respectable retrieving. Plus, they have an unhygienic habit of shaking hands in greeting instead of sniffing back ends that is very off-putting. Anyway, you see my point that humans, while they may be very pleasant companions, are not all that bright. However, they can be very persuasive when they start this training business. They use treats. Yes, they bribe us into behaving as they want, and they can be very cunning in the use of these treats. They keep trying different things until they find your weakness, and then you're a goner. I know a Springer Spaniel who will do anything for a tennis ball, and a German Shepherd who makes a right fool of himself for cuddles from his people. There is a huge variety in the means people will employ to tempt us dogs into behaving in certain ways. Squeaky toys, balls, praise, meeting other dogs, and of course, food. That is my temptation. And the thing that is my biggest weakness is cheese. From that sharp, savoury aroma, to the melt-in-the-mouth moment of eating it, to the lingering aftertaste, I love it. And my people know it, and boy do they use it. Sneakily, they took account of the fact that whenever there is cheese about, I am waiting expectantly with a hopeful expression. Then, when they asked me to carry out a behaviour, and I did it correctly, they would reward me with a piece of cheese. It didn't take me long to work out that cooperation meant cheese, and so I cooperated. After a while, though, I have realised that my appreciation of cheese has enslaved me. We'll be out for a walk, for example, and I'll be off the lead, happily trotting along, picking up the scent of other dogs and so on, stopping here for a sniff, there to leave a little message. They'll call out, "Buddy, come." I'll think, "No, I'm not going to come. I'm happy sniffing around, thanks." But even as I'm thinking that, my body has turned, and my legs are racing to get me back to my people. And why? Because I know when I get there, I'll get a piece of cheese. Just a tiny one. Not enough for that pesky Labrador's run to fat vet to disprove, but enough to get me hurtling back to eat it. My body has learned that going back to my people earns cheese, and now it seems to do it of its own accord. Very annoying, but I must have my cheese fix. The other time when treats come into play is when they try to teach you a trick. A trick is something they like to show their friends. Other people visit, and they'll all be sitting around chatting. I'll be working the room, cruising about, eating up the crumbs they've dropped, maybe trying to beg the odd bit of food, accepting any affection offered, but trying to lie on my back and wave my legs in an unobtrusive way, so I won't be sent out of the room for being a nuisance. They're all just chilling, but I'm on a deadly serious, top-secret mission to gather as much food and tummy-tickling as possible, without drawing undue attention to myself. There's an art to being a good dog. It's not all just random or instinctive, you know. Then suddenly there'll be a lull in the conversation, and without warning, one of my people will say, "Have you seen Buddy's latest trick?" Now, I generally love being the centre of things, and I'm usually ready to have a good show-off. But on those odd occasions when I might be tired or shy, what is it that has me parading around, going through my repertoire, speaking, playing dead, and giving my paw to any Tom, Dick or Harry who wants to take it? Treats, that's what. I know jolly well that not only will every trick be greeted with oohs and ahs, and possibly gentle applause, but it's the fact that on completion, a tasty titbit will be coming my way that is the ultimate motivation. It's not fair, is it? For such a limited species, humans sure can be manipulative. Oh, hold on. I think I just sensed someone taking the cheese out of the fridge. There may be a sliver for me. I'm off. Till next time.
Things your dog would definitely want to say to you. Look, when I go into the vet's surgery, please, 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 can I come out with all the bits I went in with? You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. Our breed profile this time is for one of the biggest dogs in the world, which can stand at a massive 32 inches or more to the shoulder, and it's sturdy too. And when 13 stone, that's about 180 pounds of dog, turns round and catches you with its rear end, you know all about it. But they are sweet-natured and affectionate, which is just as well. We went to meet some gorgeous dogs and their owners, and we asked them, what's it like to live with a Great Dane?
Fabulous, absolutely fabulous, wonderful.
From my point of view, I mean, I've had agoraphobia for years, and it was just her and I come up all the way from Southampton this morning, so, and I couldn't do it without her in the car. Not on my own.
They are a big lot of love, aren't they? Absolutely.
Yes, we couldn't, well, I can't imagine life without a Dane. I nearly lost one of mine just before Christmas twice, and we were, but the whole of the Dane community gets involved. And
three Great Danes, it's going to be a big vehicle.
We've both got Freelanders, and with the seats folded down, they all get in the back.
Really?
Yeah. They concertina down quite well, really, don't they?
They do. They actually roll up together, so they don't actually take up that much space in the house because they don't spread out. They roll, they curl. So they really, they don't, do they?
No.
No, they're lovely. It's great with kids.
I've got
great
a
with
daughter and they and your little girl. I mean, they just curl up round her.
And what about training? Do they pick up on training?
The girls do, but Titan, nah. No, Titan does what Titan wants to do, really. He's a bit...
There are ways and means, and they do pick up quite quickly if they want to, but they do have their own quite dominant personalities.
Yeah, the girls I've always found are much quicker. Titan, we've always said his lights are on and nobody's indoors, but...
But he's a bloke.
But he's lovely. He's just so wonderful with it.
But you're not going to force a Great Dane to do anything, are you? So what sort of methods do you is best to use with a Great Dane?
Bribery, as with kids.
The word walkies works wonders, as does
the dog
messages
as well for training.
What's the dog
message? It's we haven't got with us. It's a head collar which you can lead the dog, and basically you're in control of the situation, not the dog.
It's the same principle as a horse head collar, so that you just have control of its head and it follows you. I swear by my dog. I could take all three of mine for a walk if they're all in head collars. Honestly, with a pushchair too.
Yeah,
it's really easy. She is amazingly easy to train. She's been very, very good to train.
Mm.
Well, no, not show quality, because she's what they call a miss mark. But we don't care. We like to come and watch the showing sometimes,
yeah.
But it's not the be-all and end-all of our Great Dane life. It's a bonus for us.
Yes, definitely.
But she's trying to get over here because Mummy's here. You sit.
No.
Sit. Lulu, sit. Sit.
Oh,
good girl.
Oh.
Good girl. And would I want to sit on this sort of stones? No.
No.
They
do like sitting on your feet, don't
they?
Yes. And
your knees. Oh, sofas. Oh, sofas. You don't have your own sofas anymore. The sofas you share with the dogs, definitely.
Oh, you're on the floor.
We have been on the floor. I have pictures of you at my house on the floor, didn't I, recently?
Oh, yeah, it's not actually rude. It's the common thing to do if you're going to another Dane person's house. You just automatically sit on the floor because you get kicked off the sofa.
Yeah,
so we tend to lounge around, don't we?
I mean, you can sort of edge them over, but then they edge themselves back again, and then they sit on you 9 times out of 10.
And they've kind of got the advantage, haven't they?
Yeah, and mine actually share my waterbed at night as well. Well, one at a time.
Mm.
But the scary thing is, though, you don't actually notice them getting up beside you, which is really weird.
Yeah, they're very discreet. They kind of, Titan particularly, sidles on the side of the bed and rolls on. Mm. And you sort of look around and you think, oh, he's there. He was there last night as well. It's only when you don't have a duvet that you realise, you think, oh, I'm cold, and there he is all snuggled up.
Well, I live with 9 of them.
Oh, wow.
It's great. Mm. Absolutely great. They don't take up a lot of room in the house. It's a fallacy. They curl upon a cushion or a beanbag. And they're super temperaments and great with children. This one's called Merlin, by the way.
Mm.
He's a 4-year-old blue male. He's nearly 13 stone. They come in 5 different colours, starting with your fawn and your brindle, then your blues, your blacks, your harlequins. They are known as the gentle giants. They were used actually for hunting boar many years ago. That's what they were bred for. They were a cross sort of between a greyhound and a mastiff, and that produced the first Great Dane. And then they were used actually for hunting boar and did the job very well. But nowadays, there's no boar, is there?
No.
They're pretty obedient. They're very laid back. Give me a bean bag and a warm radiator, and I'm happy.
Oh. Do you know what I can't get over as well? The size of the vehicles.
Oh, well, you have to, don't you?
Yeah.
It's no good having a 2-seater sports car
and
a Great Dane.
Yeah, I was here earlier, and I think it was Cocker Spaniels, and they were beautiful. But you walk up to the Dane, it's just like big vehicles.
Yeah. They're all big.
Yeah.
But they're big dogs.
Yeah.
But they're super nature.
Yeah. What's it like to live with a Great Dane?
Brilliant.
Yes.
Absolutely brilliant. I wouldn't say it otherwise. I wouldn't have them if I didn't think otherwise. Mm. But they are absolutely brilliant. Fabulous family pets. Brilliant with kids, small kids, or at any age. But they're lovely. Curl themselves up into a small ball in a corner. Don't need a big house.
Who's she?
Her name's... do you want her full handle? Yes. Or she's called Gallimax. I'm into pink. I'm in the mood. Into pink's at home. Into pink didn't come. But no, she's only 9 months old. But big girl for her age.
Yes.
But they're very, very sweet creatures, very easy to keep, easy to keep clean.
How many have you got?
5.
Wow. So what's it like living with all those Great Danes?
No problem at all.
Yeah.
Things with Danes is They're that well laid back. The only thing they want is a fire and a setting. He goes out for a good walk every night because we're trying to build him up ready for Bluffs. But other than that, he'd rather stay in and lie in front of the fire or come up on the bottom of the bed at home. He is spoiled, but he's worth it. If you were sat down, he'd come up and put his nose into your nose, because that's the way they are. I was brought up with 14 German Shepherds, and I showed Shepherds from the age of 13 till 17 and a half. When I met my missus, she had four German Shepherds and a Great Dane. And we replaced, as the old Shepherds died off with old age, we replaced them with Danes and just gone back to the old ways of showing, spending all my money.
But they're worth it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he qualified as a puppy. But he's qualified for life now. So, just want to make him a champion. Kalamar Total Stardom.
What's it like to live with a Great Dane?
Pain in the backside.
Well,
you need, yes, absolutely brilliant. You need to watch, you know, when you're cleaning it, you've got the slobber on the ceilings as well as the top of the walls, haven't you? And all down the walls, radiator, dog hairs everywhere. No, yeah, really good character. Mm. Lovely, absolutely lovely. Yeah, males are like old gentlemen, aren't they? When they get there. No, yeah, lovely.
Your sofa's never big enough.
No, that's true. Yeah,
sofa's never big enough.
Sounds like a herd of elephants if they go up and down the stairs. That's if they can get back down.
So how many Great Danes have you got?
Four.
Lady seems to have one Great Dane.
Two and a half.
You don't. Once you've had a day, you'll never be without one.
Yeah. You can't have one. Yeah, two and a half.
Yeah.
How old?
He. Five minutes. But he thinks he's about this size because he likes to sit on your lap.
Mentally, they're still puppies, aren't they? But you could be talking like an 8 or 9 stone dog that's got the mentality of an 8-month-old pup. Yeah.
I think they're very human.
They
very human.
They're family dogs. Very much so. Yeah. They don't need loads of exercise and loads of food. That's what everyone says, don't they? All put a saddle on
them. They eat any more than like a German Shepherd, Rottweiler, your average sized dog.
I've got two retrievers at home, and he doesn't eat any more than they do. And he takes less exercise than they do. I've had retrievers, I've had Labradors, and once you've got one of these, you don't go back. Definitely.
They're definitely a lazy person's dog. If it meant going on 5-mile hikes, I wouldn't have had one.
All the dogs we met there were gorgeous, so friendly and so calm after you've got used to living with a manic Labrador. The other thing that was striking was no one seems to have just one Great Dane, and they're very enthusiastic about the breed that they love. There's a link on our website to a Great Dane enthusiast site run by some of the people we spoke to there. If you haven't already taken a look at our website, which, if you haven't been paying attention, is www.dogcastradio.com, then please do. We're always adding new features. And, for example, we now have a TV guide page where you can see what dog-related TV programmes are coming up in the next week. We currently only have UK TV listings on there, but we will be adding other countries soon. Another section coming soon will be our breed profiles, where we'll give you relevant information about breeds you might be interested in. The games page we promised earlier should finally be making it onto our site in the next few days. Also, in the near future, we're going to be asking for pictures of your own dogs, so we can show them off to everyone else. So get a head start and send them in early now. Whatever breed or mix of breed you own, send it to us. We'd love to see them. As always on the website, you will also find information and links about this episode's topics and those from previous ones. Till next time, do look after yourself and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dog Cast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie at dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
Hey, bird.
Yeah?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
The interrupting dog.
The interrupting
bark, dog. Bark, bark, bark.